and welcome to episode 21 of the podcast to be named later, the official podcast of OutfieldFlyRule.com. My name is Brent Blackwell, here today with Chris Jervis.
Hello, hello. Celebrating our 21st podcast. We're legal now.
Hey, it's August 29th when we're recording this, so...
We actually had recorded one prior to this last week, but as soon as we hit publish, or not even publish, as soon as we started editing it, some Braves news started breaking that just kind of made everything not topical. So
yeah,
we just decided to skip it.
Part of our process is, you know, if there's news to talk about, if there's trades, if there's a winning streak, if there's, you know, things that are topical, we'll hit those. But sometimes there's just nothing going on. Sometimes the Braves go 2-4, and it's the 2-4 that you've seen most weeks of the season or whatever, and it's there's nothing going on. And so you kind of have some canned topics in the bank. And one of the things we hadn't done in a while is look at prospects in the minor league system. And so we thought, well, there's nothing going on with the Braves right now, so we'll do that. So we recorded that. It was like 80 minutes of recording, and I had just started the editing process, and the Braves made a trade and announced they were bringing up their biggest prospect. So
everything went bye-bye.
Yeah, the Braves pretty much stole our thunder, and I was like, nobody's going to want to hear about the 28th-ranked prospect in the system when Dansby Swanson's about to play. So we shelved that. We may try to salvage the audio for future for some future segments.
It's also available on the Lost Tapes, which you can find at a CD near you for $9.99.
Yeah,
how much are we selling?
We'll throw that in a bargain bin somewhere. Okay, so...
So since we last talked...
Since you guys last heard anything from us, it was my solo podcast. So we're going to cover transactions of note since then. And then we'll see what else we can talk about from there. We might actually discuss some future potential transactions at the end. So Chris has the list if you want to get us started.
There's been a whole lot of moves, mostly guys up, guys down, and most of it is guys we've already seen before.
Mm-hmm.
This is a combination of the Brian Snitker bullpen carousel, ineffective starting pitchers, ineffective relief pitchers. It's a combination of a lot of things. Injuries have led to it, all kinds of things. But the biggest notes are going to be the Braves DFA'd Manny Banuelos, which is kind of a surprise to some because Banuelos was considered, you know, one of the top prospects in the organization, but he just could not stay healthy.
So I'm not surprised that we DFA'd him because I'm not surprised that we wanted space on the 40-man roster that he was taking up. That doesn't surprise me. What did surprise me is that we released him.
Right.
And that tells me that we have given up on his rehabilitation.
Right.
Which is a shame. I didn't have high expectations for Banuelos, but
Banuelos has been a prospect for a few years now, and he's probably more advanced in age than some of the other prospects. But he's not really been getting any development because he's not been able to pitch. And that may be one of the factors that went into it as well is, you know, yeah, he's 24, 25 years old, whatever he is, but he's not had the development of a normal 24, 25-year-old pitcher simply because he's not been able to get on the mound in game situations and work on things and develop his stuff. So not only is he behind in development in terms of developing his stuff and developing his game, but he's also behind in terms of just injury. I hope to see him pick up somewhere, maybe catch on somewhere and do well, but at this point, I think the Braves had just kind of given up on him in terms of being a functional pitcher for them.
Yeah, and through his rehab this year, he had really struggled with control or command. It seems like when he would get he would either struggle with throwing pitches in the strike zone, which is control. At AAA, in 9 starts, he walked 6.53 batters per 9 innings, which is more than he struck out in AAA this year. And at AA, it was more of the opposite issue. He was getting too much of the zone. He was getting hit hard. Batters had a .352 batting average on balls in play, and they were hitting nearly 2 home runs every 9 innings. So he just wasn't finding the consistency. Now, granted, I mean that's rehab coming from. But what kind of injury was it? A shoulder injury last year?
He had elbow and shoulder injuries, but I think the most recent one was a shoulder.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, was an elbow because he. he had surgery, and then he got bone spurs in after the surgery. It was very similar to...
He was coming back from Tommy John when we acquired him.
Right.
And then what sidelined him at the end of last season? Was that the bone spurs?
Bone spurs.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which are normally workable, but they can also be indicative of continuing problems.
Yeah.
And again, it boils back to even if he was healthy... Because of the injuries, he's, you know, 2 years behind the development curve anyway.
Yeah.
Because of the injuries. But the Braves cut ties with him. Maybe he gets picked up somewhere along the line once he's had a chance to get himself kind of situated injury-wise.
Mm-hmm.
The other big news is the return of three of our core players. Arodys Vizcaíno. Tyler Flowers and Julio Teheran all returned from injury at various points throughout the last 2 weeks or so. But the biggest news and the one that caused us to really shelve the podcast last time was the Braves did the unthinkable. They practiced some witchcraft and voodoo, and they managed to get someone to take Eric Ibar from them for actual functional players.
Mm-hmm.
And... So the Braves sent shortstop Eric Ibar to the Detroit Tigers for infielder Mike Ivelitz and catcher Cade Savike.
It's close. It's Savik.
I'm going to call him Squeaky because that's what it looks like.
It's Savik.
It looks like Squeaky. He's Squeaky to me.
It's better to just to know how to say it and then ask others to spell it for you because no one's going to get Savik right. Scivicque.
Catcher Cade Savik. Braves traded Ibar for Avilés and Savik. There was also some cash involved. There's a question. We've had some conversations with the notorious BOG on Twitter, the Braves options guy. You should check him out if you get a chance. About the amount of cash involved in the trade.
Yeah,
because deals involving $1 million or more have to go through league approval, and they get... specified in the transaction. Really, this deal was said to be what, payroll neutral, essentially?
According to Detroit's general manager, it is.
Gotcha.
And the Braves haven't said, baseball hasn't said, if it's neutral in terms of cash, then the Braves would have sent, what, 1.5? Is that what I came up with?
It's going to be right around that. And if they send more than $1 million, it has to be approved by the league, so it's possible they sent, you know, $900,000 or something. And I think I saw one quote from a Detroit beat writer who said it was cash neutral-ish. You know, it roughly balanced.
He got that from Detroit's GM. That's the same source.
But the Braves managed to get living, breathing players for Eric Ibar. And what did they do with that living, breathing major league player they received?
Released him.
Immediately.
Yeah.
Braves released Mike Avilés the day that he arrived.
Which may be because... Okay, so maybe that does tell you that the Braves sent like $999,999 in the trade because Avilés was included to make it a faster transaction so that we didn't have to wait on MLB approval.
Right.
And... so we could get Avilés DFA'd, we could get Tyler Flowers activated, we could get Swanson called up and added to the 40-man roster. If you don't, I mean, because it's the same either way. You're either paying Avilés to be released, or you're just sending more money with Ibar to Detroit. It's the same expenditure for the Braves.
And it could be that they consider it cash neutral even if it wasn't, because the Braves received cash for Ibar in the deal that brought him over here. They received money from the Angels to make up the difference between the Simmons and Ibar contracts.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe when they balance all of the ledgers involved in the transaction, it was cash neutral.
Okay, yeah.
It's entirely possible that's the case, too. But the Braves send Eric Ibar to the joy of many Braves fans to Detroit. Braves receive a young catcher. We don't know much about the catcher other than he's said to be a solid defensive catcher. Everything that I've read said that he seems to have a great mind for the game as far as calling games and a great game management plan. You know, his ability to manage games is good. I don't believe, I've only looked at it a little bit, his bat has caught up to it, but it looks like he might have the frame for some power. But it was a prospect. What are you going to get for Eric Ibarra? You know, he was a guy hitting, he was hitting 242 when he left Atlanta, but he was sitting below 215 for the bulk of the year.
Yeah, Savik, I don't know, I think Savik is interesting. He's not a great prospect, but he's an interesting one who could...
And it was organizational depth. We were weak at the catcher position in the league, in the organization, so, you know, maybe he's a lottery ticket that pans out.
Yeah, I think Savik is a guy who could make the majors at some point in time, and I think he's probably a backup.
He might be a Tyler Flowers type, you know, a guy who's probably a backup everywhere he goes, but is good enough at defense, framing, calling games, handling pitchers to consistently get work.
Yeah.
You know, David Ross made a career out of that.
Right.
And then, so that was the Eric Ibarra trade. And then the next big deal that came along wasn't really that big a deal, but the next major transaction was the Braves traded outfielder Jeff Francoeur to the Florida Marlins for cash. I believe there was some cash. No, they sent cash to the Marlins for catcher Matt Foley. And who was the other gentleman? Was it Dylan Moore?
So there was a three-way trade.
Yes, that's
with
right.
Texas. So the Braves sent Francoeur and cash to the Marlins for Foley.
Right.
And then the Braves sent a international
international bonus slot
to Texas for shortstop Dylan Moore.
Right.
The whole trade was about Dylan Moore from Atlanta's perspective. Either that or doing something nice for Jeff Francoeur and putting him onto a contender.
I do think that was part of it.
Yeah.
I do think that just from some things that I've read as recently as coming in to do this podcast today, that it seems like the Braves may have thrown a bone to Francoeur. Hey, let's send him out to a contender and see if he has a shot to get a ring or, you know, play in some playoffs and you know, get to a World Series. It helps that they got functional players back as well.
Player.
Yeah, that's true.
Matt Foley...
is not the functional player.
He gets some walks. He's gotten some base hits, but for the most part, I don't think he's considered a significant prospect. He's catching depth in the organizational sense, and you need... Every team needs like 18, 20 catchers because somebody's got to warm up the second reliever in the bullpen, you know, in Double A, and so it can't be your starter if he's batting. So you got to have depth in the catcher. Foley is not; it's not impossible for him to advance and do something, but it's. I don't think he's a player you need to expect to be in Atlanta down the road.
Well, shortstop Dylan Moore was clearly the target of this. What do you know about Dylan Moore?
Dylan Moore, I know that. It's basically that he's something of an unknown. That's what I know. Is that Moore has not gotten a lot of ink written about him since he was drafted in the seventh round of the 2015 draft. So he's only been in organized ball a little over a year in the Texas system. But he's got an interesting combination of good speed, good functional speed on base paths with...
A little bit of pop, too.
And some home runs. Yeah, he
776 career plate appearances, I think, when I looked. He had something like 21 home runs and 55 steals, right?
21 homers and 56 steals. I guess he's stolen one of the Braves now.
Woo!
And
since he plays shortstop, he can be moved anywhere if we need to. I think I've seen that they're going to try him out at a couple of different positions.
I don't think shortstop was ever supposed to be his long-term position.
I'm thinking third base is probably what they were looking at there.
I would say second maybe is where he could. He kind of looks like a second baseman with like the. I don't like comparing guys to successful major leaguers because it puts pressure, and also he's not like this in every way. But he's got the when it comes to power speed combo, it's like Brandon Phillips. Right. Style of offense of a guy who could maybe hit 15 homers and steal 30 bases, but that's if his bat develops, and he hasn't reached Double A yet, but he's had a good year this year. He batted He got a .372 on base percentage at single A, low A this year. Hit 9 home runs and stole 37 bases. Got the call up to high A with the Rangers, where he was batting .351 with a .400 on base and a .649 slugging at the time of the trade. So he's continuing to get better, and that's kind of all you really want to see. I don't know how much like major league projection they talk about with him, but it's the results are good.
And for some of those Braves fans who, for the last couple of, 12 to 18 months have been screaming, we need bats, we need bats, we need bats. If you look back over the last few deals they've made, the Travis DeMeritz and the Dylan Moores and whatnot, they've gone after some guys who have some high upside with some power potential. There's some swing and miss capability. There's some flaws in their game. But they've started accumulating a few bats here. Now, granted, they're all still in the low minors. But
we'll say Moore has not had as much of an issue with strikeouts as the other guys that you mentioned. He has been under 20 at every stop this year, and he's been at 15 in both high places, which is good.
So we can kind of see the the roadmap kind of starting to come into focus a little bit on what they're looking to do, and kind of gives us an idea on a game plan. Yeah. Or a time frame.
They're getting different kinds of players, which is good.
Right. Prior to this year, I think when we did the beginning of the season podcast, we were talking about the profile of most of the batters in the organization, and they were, the slap hitting singles hitters with speed.
Mm-hmm.
And that profile's been fairly rehabilitated over the course of the season. So, but those are the major transactions. Francoeur goes off to the Marlins, maybe gets a shot at trying to get into a World Series. There's been some talk also that apparently there's an open invitation to Francoeur to return next year when his contract ends with the Marlins.
You know, if I were a slightly below average, or significantly below average, but still worthy of being on a roster, major league player, and I were a free agent, I would 100% look into signing with the Braves, Phillies, or Reds for next season, because that's your easiest ticket to being on a contender.
Yep.
Is to sign with the Braves. And
because those teams are going to be shopping their unneeded players at the deadline to contenders who want a bench bat or need to fill a spot.
Yeah. I mean, you're a middle reliever who signed with the Yankees this year, and you got stuck. You're still, I don't know what New York's record is right now, but
they've been playing better since the call up with the kids. Gary Sanchez has been going absolutely nuts for New York.
Yeah, they're still, they're 6.5 games out of first, but they're 3.5 games out of a wild card spot at best, and that's if both wild cards are from their division. But, which they may not be, but there's a difference though. Like New York could have slid over the last few weeks, and those middle relievers would have been stuck on a 500 team with no playoff prospects. Whereas Kelly Johnson and Jeff Francoeur got traded to contenders, right? So,
in addition to those moves, we've had some guys up and down. So many of those that they're probably not worth. I mean, you see it daily with who's pitching. So, there's just too many of those moves to cover. Aaron Blair and Matt Wisler have returned from Gwinnett. Whistler threw a near no-hitter the other night, 7 innings no-hitter, 8 innings pitched with I think it was 1 hit, 1 run allowed. So he looked good when he came back. Blair got pummeled yesterday. The thing with Blair still seems to be getting the ball over the plate, but he's been hurt bad this year. But he's only 60 innings into his major league career, so I'm not terribly worried about him yet. He's one of those guys that just needs to work through it, and he may turn out to be nothing. He's a high floor guy, so he probably has the stuff to stick in the big leagues.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, how functional will he be, and in what role? But at 60 innings, you can't really tell anything on any kind of pitcher at that point in time.
Also, this is going back for just a second to the Francoeur trade. When the Braves traded International Money to Texas, I know some people may wonder if that puts us into some sort of hole the Braves, because the Braves went crazy this year. The Braves went all in on this international signing class. They had already put themselves in a hole willingly for future years. Each team is allotted, this is just a quick explanation, each team is allotted a certain amount of spending money internationally each year. And once you go over it, you start accumulating penalties for future years. Teams are taxed at
the some... penalty is 100% of the overage.
Okay. At a certain point. Or is it...
In the international pool, I believe it's over the entire overage, but
okay.
If there is a certain point, it's at 5%.
And then there's a certain point also where you start getting limits on what you can spend in future international pools. So like next year, the Braves are not going to be able to give a bonus of more than $300,000 to any international player. But the Braves are fine with that. They looked at this year's class. They said, this is the class to do it. So they went and spent big on Kevin Maiton and all the other players they acquired.
Gutierrez, Abraham Gutierrez.
So you can trade some of those international slots. You can trade...
the dollar value.
Right. You can trade chunks of dollar values to other teams. And the Braves... because the Braves blew past their allotment this year anyway, the specific chunks didn't... They're mostly irrelevant to them. They just added some tax dollars is all right. All this did.
So essentially by trading that to the Texas Rangers, I think it was an $800,000 slot or so, 860, something like that. So essentially what the Braves did was they traded it to Texas. That reduced their available pool by $860,000. So they spent the 860 plus the penalty on it. You know, it was basically a $1.5 million additional penalty that the Braves were going to be paying that they weren't paying before. So now, where they had a $12 million penalty, now it's a $13.5 million penalty.
The team has the money in their...
They had allocated it for that, so they may as well use it to get something.
Right. Yeah. So, basically, my only point with that is that it's not a big deal that's going to hurt us.
No, not at all.
In any way. Other than it just cost us some money.
But that's the transactions. Like I said, there's a lot of minor ones, but nothing of real note other than those ones that we talked about. But the Eric Ibar trade, as part of that deal, it created an opening on the 40-man roster. And there was some question as to what was going to happen. Was Avilés going to keep that spot? Was he going to be a backup for the Braves? Well, the Braves DFA'd him, so that left that spot open.
Daniel Castro. Was it Daniel Castro?
It was a Dan. It was a Dan that they brought up. Braves used that open spot to promote super prospect, highly heralded prospect, future of the team, face of the franchise, and marketing...
Lord of the realm, first of his name, protector of the seven kingdoms.
Marketing program for the new stadium, Dansby Swanson. They promoted Swanson from AA Mississippi. Now, there was some question as to whether that promotion was warranted based on some of his recent performance, and that is a legitimate question. But so Swanson comes up and faces pretty much every player or every pitcher except for the big three of Max Scherzer, Zach Greinke, and Madison Bumgarner. What are your thoughts on the call-up of Mr. Swanson?
It's interesting. While
you're collecting that thought, I wanted to say, Brent actually wrote an article when this happened at outfieldflyrule.com. Go check it out. He actually gives some good thoughts on why the Braves did this, one of the strategies on why they may have called him up now. Sorry to interrupt you there.
Well, no, that's basically what I was about to say is just, go check out the outfieldflyrule.com article on Dansby. It covers the Eric Ibar trade at one point, and then it goes into to the Dansby call-up. But, it's interesting. I think it's a lot of different things. I think it's goodwill towards the fans.
I think that's the primary reason is okay. I don't think he was necessarily ready to be called up, and he still had things to work on at the minor league level. But I think this is kind of a bone for the fans that's been thrown to them after a season of, what, we're looking at 100 to 105 losses probably.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going into a new stadium. I think this is the beginning of the marketing program for next year.
Yeah, I think also, and I've covered this a little bit, a good bit in the article, but I think the timing is interesting because if you let him play out this season, one of two things will happen. Either Dansby will prove himself ready, and if he's ready,
then let him play.
Then let him play. You've got a young star shortstop who you know can start an all-star career, hopefully. If he's not ready, then it gives you a little bit of
we'll cover.
Yes, with the fans. For the fans and the media for 2017. If you want to start Swanson out at AAA. And Swanson, let me tell you, I've got as many hits in AAA in my career as Dansby Swanson does. He's never played there. He skipped the level. And some players can do that, but it's not unreasonable if he struggles at the major league level to finish this season if Atlanta wants to send him to Gwinnett to start next year.
And maybe bring him up, say, in about May, after he's had a month or so of AAA time, to get acclimated to the higher speed of the game, the faster mm-hmm. speed of the game, whatever it is. And, oh, incidentally, we also saved a month of service time that we can keep him for an extra year. You know, the Cubs did that with Chris Bryant this past year, and they just got hammered on it.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to leave him down longer
right.
if we do. Because
we brought him up this year.
We brought him up now. So it would be more, instead of bringing him up in May, it would be bringing him up in, well, actually, no.
It'll be 6 weeks.
Yeah, 6 weeks is what you have to. So the extra year is easy to get around because it's just a couple weeks.
It's the Super 2 that we really. I don't think they're concerned about Super 2
no.
as much as the extra 162 games in year 6.
Right. Super 2 is just money and arbitration.
And for those who don't understand that Super 2 status means every player is allowed 3 arbitration years. So once a player gets put on the 40-man roster, they get called up to the big leagues. They get 6 years of team control. The team controls that player for 6 years. And in the first 3 of those years, the player has to play for pretty much what the team says. He has no say-so.
League minimum.
For years 4, 5, and 6, the player earns arbitration where he can go in front of a neutral third party and say, hey, I think I'm worth this much. And the team says, well, we think you're worth this much. And then the arbitrator has to pick one of those two numbers. There's not a pick one in the middle or assign a new number. It's either what the team says or what the player says.
And most of those get settled out of that hearing because the hearing can get nasty at times.
Correct.
Yeah.
There are certain cases where players who were called up early can earn arbitration after just 2 years rather than after 3 years. So they basically get a fourth year of arbitration rather than a third year.
Those are players that it's like the top something percent.
If that player if they are in the top, I think it's like 17% of service time among 2 and 3 year players.
Okay.
So if you call a player up early enough and he plays and he stays up, and he has 2.7 years of service time, and that's in the top 17% of players that have between 2 years and 3 years service time, then he becomes Super 2 and gets that extra year of arbitration. And I think most, there's been a couple of studies shown to see what it happens. It affects pitchers a lot more than position players. But on average, a team spends about $3 million more through the arbitration process with a Super 2 player than they do with a regular player. Regular arbitration.
So it's a cost, but it's not anything that's going to send him to another team faster or really, you know, torpedo our payroll.
It's a monetary thing, and that's 3 years spread over that extra, you know, over that 4 year arbitration period.
Yeah.
The bigger issue is the service time issue.
Mm-hmm.
A major league player earns 183 days in a major league season. A player earns 172 days of service time in a big league season. When that player gets to 6 years of service time, he becomes a free agent. And teams can control that service time by keeping a player on the big league roster or sending him down to the minors. Players earn service time on the DL. They don't earn service time in the minors. Where the service time comes into play is if you can hold that player down in the minors long enough that he does not get 172 days in that major league season, then it rolls over to the next year and you can effectively get a seventh year out of him. So you basically
right.
have an extra year of control if you manage it properly.
Because they don't round up. If you're sitting at the end of your sixth season, if you're sitting there at 5.9 years of service time, well, sorry, you got to wait till you cross the six, and you get to be a free agent at the end of the year in which you cross the six. So That is why waiting 2 weeks on a guy at the beginning of the year, a guy who's never made his debut, waiting 2 weeks will mean he, in 6 years, if he's an all-star for you and plays every game for the rest of his pre-free agency years, he's going to finish the sixth season with your team at like 5.9.
And it literally can be 2 weeks. Literally can be 2 weeks. There's 183 days in a major league season. There's 172 service days assigned. So if you bring a guy up and let him play for 171 days, he is not going to get his major league service time for that year. He's going to get 0.97, you know, years of service time, which means he still has 6 years of control.
Right. And so, there's a lot of media debate, and fans hate the practice of bringing up a guy 2 weeks late because, you know, a team like the Cubs had to try to convince their fans last year that they really were trying to win when they put Chris Bryant in AAA for 2 weeks and had Luis Valbuena or whoever as their, I forget who their starter was, to open up the season last year. Oh, it was Tommy LaStella, I think, was their starter at third base, maybe, to start the year. And, you're clearly lying about that. You're clearly sticking him down there to add that year of team control. But you can't really blame the teams. It's the system that the players agreed to.
It's the rules in place, and they're playing by the rules that are in place, and we expect it probably to be addressed in the new CBA. You know, for teams, players are an asset, and it makes more sense, especially for a team like Atlanta, where this is a lost season. Mm-hmm. And having a player for 30 games now doesn't mean as much as having a player, especially if it's an impact player, doesn't mean as much to have him for 30 games now than it does to have him for 160 games, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years from now when you expect to be in the playoffs. A good example for the Braves, one that applies to the Braves, is Malik Smith. When Malik Smith was called up earlier this year, if he had played out the entire season, he would have earned 173 days of service time. That would have been one more than he needed to qualify for a full year of service. If the Braves had waited simply 2 days to call him up, he would have earned 171 days of service time, and instead of being a free agent in 2023, he'd be a free agent in 2024. So basically, 2 days cost the Braves a year of service time for Malik Smith. Now, Smith's situation is a little bit different in the sense that injuries forced his call-up. Ender Inciarte got injured on the third day of the season. So there was really nothing, you know, the Braves were right in calling him up at that point, I think.
I also think that Malik Smith may be different in that I really only worry about the service time extra year situation
for a superstar
with elite prospects.
A Chris Bryant.
Prospects that are going to be really difficult to afford to re-sign. And I think Malik Smith is potentially a good player, but I don't know that I don't feel really confident that he's going to be a good player in 5 years.
Right. So, he's going to be anywhere from a functional everyday major leaguer to a fourth outfielder.
Right.
I don't expect him. He might even make an all-star game or two. I don't expect him to be the superstar player who's going to get step-ups in salary to, you know, $18 and $20 million, things like that. But he may turn out to be that. But that's how the service time comes into play. And that brings us back to what we started with Dansby Swanson of just calling him up now. Is there any benefit to calling him up now or holding him down? And that's how it would affect next year. It kind of, as you were saying, gives a little bit of cover for the team if they do decide next year, hey, he's not ready. Mm-hmm. As you said in the article, if he is ready, that's a great thing.
Yeah, it's kind of the only win-win situation that the Braves could create out of this. Now, granted, the Braves could just say, you know, could just give the finger to all the people that care about it, and they could have just said, well, we're leaving Swanson in the minors until, you know, mid-April anyway. Right. But they did. So it's smart. It's a win-win with the added bonus of appeasing some fans. Fans have been clamoring for prospects, and we want to see these prospects at the major league level. And I mean, I even understand that waiting is probably better in most cases. I still want to see him too.
Yeah.
I'm excited. I was excited to see Swanson in a major league uniform playing good defense.
At some point, he's going to have to start playing. And if service time is not a consideration, then you may as well take the last half of the season or last third of the season, whatever month, to see what you have with him. But since he's been called up, he's actually been playing fairly well. I think you mentioned also in the article that the glove should be fine and that the bat is really the question here, and I think that's kind of what we've seen.
The glove has been pretty good, and the bat has, yeah, it's I gotta tell you, I'm not right this often on stuff, but I have been. I turned out to be pretty right on Swanson, at least in the short term, and that is, I thought he would get singles. He would collect his singles and he would play good defense and he would, you know, do okay on the base paths. And he's batting .278 with one stolen base and he's playing good defense.
In 39 plate appearances. Got a .308 on base percentage. Not a lot of power shown yet, but that's probably to be expected. They're just kind of challenging him and, you know, just go up there and swing the bat and do what got you here. The Braves have said when they called him up, they said that they were going to kind of pick and choose the battles for him to kind of limit his exposure. You don't want to you want to get him experience without overwhelming him. And like I said, he has not played. He didn't play against Scherzer, didn't play against Zach Greinke, or didn't play against Madison Bumgarner, which was kind of, you know, Bumgarner is a lefty, so you at least probably could have made an argument for him playing there. But it allows him to get exposure without being overwhelmed. I mean, people forget, you know, the one argument is you called him up to see what he is. Let him play. Let him play against the best. He's a competitor. Let him play against the best. The flip side to that is the kid's never played at AAA. So yeah. This is a pretty big step up. Just, you know, just if he was facing De La Rosa, it would be a step up.
Yeah, and I saw, like, even in his debut, there was one at bat where sliders low and away made him look silly.
Yep.
And it can happen.
The ball breaks differently here. The ball moves faster. It moves more.
Yeah. So it's
there's going to be a period of adjustment. I'd rather see him have some successes and limit his. He's going to be good enough that he'll be playing against the Scherzers every day of the.
Hang on, I forgot to turn off the air conditioning before the podcast started, so we're going to do that right now. Okay, so. Until we were interrupted by the air conditioner, but which is a very powerful and loud air conditioner, apparently. Swanson. So
he's going to play. He's the kind of guy. He's going to play against Greinke. He's going to play against Scherzer. But while he's up right now, you want to kind of limit his exposure to. You want to limit his failures and maximize his successes. So you play him against guys you're pretty sure he can hit, and you limit his exposure to the guys that. Not just Dansby Swanson has a problem hitting, but Barry Bonds had a problem hitting, or you know, guys of that nature.
My only, and we talked about this before the podcast, one of my only issues with Snicker and Swanson so far has been, you know.
I know where you're going.
Yeah, you want to limit his failures, but I feel like we're also limiting his successes in one key decision that Snicker made.
Dropping a bunt, asking him to put a bunt down in, what was that, against Arizona?
Arizona, eighth inning. Now, granted, the Braves were down by one run. It's an 8-7 game. Chase Darno walks. He's on first with nobody out.
Nobody out.
Nobody out.
Darno was the leadoff batter.
Okay. Swanson, they asked Swanson to drop down the bunt. Well, while I've already started touting my own statistics at the professional baseball level, let me throw this out there. I've had as many professional sacrifice bunts as Dansby Swanson. If you want to work on bunting with Swanson in spring training, go for it. If you want to work on bunting with Swanson at the AAA level, AA games, single A games, that's fine. The time to work on bunting with Dansby Swanson is not against a relief pitcher in the eighth inning of a game, against the team that drafted him.
Especially in a game that in all. That run means nothing.
It doesn't mean
anything. In the scheme of things of the Braves 2016 season. It'd be different if this was a playoff season and the Braves were trying to fight for a wild card and every victory mattered at this point. This is a lost season, and getting that run.
Who cares if we lose that game?
That run means nothing. I mean, I'm not a fan of sacrifice bunting anyway because of just the giving away of the only aspect of the game that you can't recover in any way, shape, or form.
It helps the defense. It helps the defense more than it helps
you. A pitcher will tell you every time they'll gladly give up the sack. They'll gladly allow the sack bunt because it's an out. And outs are hard. Outs are hard for them to record. So if you're willing to give them one, go for it.
You know, with no outs, you need to bat 333 to get in runs. You know, with you need to get 1 in 3 hits before. Right. But if you give away the out, you gotta hit 500.
Yep.
To get that run in. That's not always the case, but that's a good way of looking at it. It's you're putting more pressure on your next hitters when you give away the out.
I mean, you look at it, how many times have we heard the saying that even the best hitters fail 70% of the time? You know, because, you know, a 300 average is getting out 70% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So why do you want to boost that? Why do you want to make that actually better? And we can get into run expectancies and base out situations. That doesn't really make for a good podcast. But you actually stand a chance of scoring more without the out.
Yes.
With the runner on first and nobody out, your average run expectancy, if I remember off the top of my head, is just a slight bit higher than with the runner on second and one out.
It is. Now, it's different. You do increase your odds of scoring exactly one run.
Right.
But you limit your chances of scoring two runs. So the Braves made it more likely, when they decided Dansby should bunt, they made it more likely that they would tie the game. They made it less likely that they would take the lead in the game. So here's when I would bunt with a position player. I would bunt in the bottom of the ninth inning in a tie game. That's when I would bunt.
And it depends
because
on it's
you win
all
the
contextual.
Game and you won't need more runs than that.
And it's all contextual too. It depends on who the player
true.
Is.
True, not
you
bunting
know, if
with
it's
Freddie
Rafael
Freeman.
Belliard, yeah. But I'm not asking. Yeah, exactly. I'm not asking Freddie Freeman to bunt there.
But yeah, I thought Snitker did a poor job. Also, and it's not just the bunting. It's that Swanson had never done it before, and that's a poor time. It was a time where he could have had a big successful moment to build on.
When you said he
took that chance away.
When you said he had no sacrifice bunts in his professional career, that wasn't just as a Brave. That was in his professional career since he graduated Vandy.
Yes.
All minor league teams, all minor league stops.
Yes.
Gotcha. So, yeah.
According to a article I read. I didn't double check that, but that was what I read.
I think he's done a fine job since he's been here.
Mm-hmm.
I think fans are happy to see him. Fans are taken to him. He also has, and this gets back to what I mentioned when I said I thought it was kind of a PR thing to call him up. We saw in some of the commercials before the game this series, I was watching, I had the pregame show on TV the last two games, which I don't normally watch, and they're already packaging him in marketing bits. They're already packaging him in commercials. They're preparing him to be the face when Freddie leaves 5 years from now or whatever.
He's going to sell a lot of jerseys.
I can tell you right now that the bulk of the marketing next year is going to be, come see Dansby Swanson and the rest of the Baby Braves, blah, blah, blah. And that's a good thing. I mean, it gives fans something to look forward to, especially when you're moving into a new stadium and you have to drive people to come to that new stadium. People are going to come to the new stadium just because it's new. But if it's a bad product on the field, they're not going to stay long.
So if Turner Field was the TED, is SunTrust Field going to be known as the nursery because of all our...
Yeah, the nursery for all the babies.
All the babies that are playing there.
Kids are kids' stadium.
The daycare. Yeah.
So, but yeah, Swanson's looked pretty good. That kind of brings us to, you know, September's a couple of days away.
Yep.
And rosters are going to expand for anybody that doesn't know. And September 1st, Major League rosters. Typically, an active Major League roster is 25 men. The team has to – they also have a reserve roster for 15 additional players that they can keep in reserve. That's called the 40-man roster. On September 1st, the rosters expand to 40, and this allows the Major League club to call up younger players or additional players to help them out through the last month of the season. Typically, it's been a reward given to your better minor league players.
I will say this. I hate this rule.
I hate it too.
If you're going to do it for a month, do it in April.
That was what I was going to say. You had a great point that actually got me thinking about this when you told me about it. Doing it in April, it does two things. One, pitching staffs are already shot in April because it takes pitchers longer to work themselves out. So you need the extra pitchers in April anyway, coming out of spring training.
And then that would mean you would prefer to carry an extra catcher or two as well.
Right. So you can carry an extra catcher. You can carry an extra pitcher, several pitchers. But the other thing that it does is for the next 30 days now, we're going to see some teams who, like the Cubs, who are well in first place, playing some teams who maybe are in some wild card chases or are possibly in contention, and they're going to be playing some, I don't want to say scrubs, that's the wrong word, they're going to be playing some less than major league players to get them some playing time and get their veterans some rest, and that has a direct impact on the playoff races.
You mean teams that are not in the race?
Well, both.
Well, I guess both could be.
The Cubs are going to be resting Chris Bryant and guys like
that. Oh, I get what you're saying, yes.
And then you have somebody like the Braves who are going to be playing a team like the Marlins in contention, and the Braves are going to be playing all their kids.
Yeah.
So it has an adverse effect on the competitive balance of the playoff race.
In no way, shape, or form should some of these September call-ups that are here just to bide some time, should they be affecting Major League pennant races?
Right, and that's what's going to happen. Yeah. And it happens every year. But the Braves rosters expand on September 1st, and the Braves will be allowed to call up anybody that's on their 40-man roster. And some of the names that are likely to be called up are guys you've already seen. We're going to get the Matt Whistlers and the Aaron Blairs if they haven't already been sent back down by the time this airs.
Whistlers, yeah, as I said, Whistlers already up, and he's nearly pitched a no-hitter.
Yeah, Blair's up too. Mm-hmm. But there are going to be other guys that we've already seen throughout the year. You know, we've already seen the Casey Kellys and whatnot. Those guys are already going to be there.
Let me ask, what about Kyle Kubitsa, who we claimed on waivers? He's on the 40-man. Do you think we see him?
I think it's possible Kubitsa comes up.
I do too.
Just to see what he's capable of, and also, you know, gives him a switch hitting pinch hitter off the bench.
Yeah, he's a lefty hitter, actually. But
is he lefty? I thought he was a switch at one point.
May have abandoned it. I don't know. Daniel Castro, think we see him?
He'll be up.
Yeah. How about John Gant?
John Gant will be up. Matter of fact,
is Gant hurt now?
Yeah, he's coming back from an injury. He's on a rehab assignment, so he'll be back when rosters expand.
Tyrell Jenkins?
I think Jenkins may come back, yes.
Casey Kelly.
Kelly will be back.
Wilfredo Boskin.
Don't know about Wilfredo Boskin. He was a minor league signing. He may be a DFA candidate to make room on the roster for somebody who's not on the roster who will be coming up.
Okay. Jason Hirsch. See him back?
I honestly don't know.
I mean,
I think so.
Yeah, I think so too.
Right now, with the bullpen being the way it is and with the starters being the way they are, I think they'll take all the pitchers they can get.
Madison Youngener.
He got pummeled his last couple of times up, so
yeah,
they may just want him to get a little bit of work.
His innings, he's not even 10 innings into his career. It's
it's
a little early to start typing all caps and getting angry about Madison Youngener.
1962 Mets.
Shea Simmons,
if he's back and activated, will be up.
Okay, so, Akil Morris?
I think Morris will come up.
Okay. I think that may be about it for 40-man guys who are not hurt right now. So what about adding?
We're going to have some prospects who, and there's probably three big ones that people are going to want to see, because they've been hearing about them for years.
Ozzie Albies.
We'll get back to Albies in a second.
Okay.
Rio Ruiz, third baseman at Gwinnett. He's had an up and down season, but largely a successful season. I think Ruiz probably gets the call-up. He's probably at a point now where he's done well enough in AAA that you reward him with, even if it's sitting on the bench and getting two pinch hit appearances, let him come sit around the guys. Let him get the atmosphere of a major league clubhouse.
I agree. I think he's earned it.
The problem with Ruiz is he's not on the 40-man roster, and he can only come up if he's on the 40-man, which means we're going to have to DFA somebody to make room. It could be Gordon Beckham. It could be Chase Darnot. It could be Daniel Castro.
It be moving someone to the 60? Like
Eric O'Flaherty?
Like Rob Whalen is on the DL with shoulder fatigue.
He's not going to pitch. Yeah.
I don't know why Rob Whalen would need to come back this year. Shoulder fatigue tells me you don't need to pitch till spring.
Well, the shoulder fatigue is a catch-all. Whalen was put on the DL primarily because he had already reached his max innings. It was a career high in innings, and in addition to being a career high in innings, typically teams only want to step up their players 40 innings or so at the max from level to level,
mm-hmm.
or from year to year, and he was sitting at about 48 innings max step up from last year, so he's not pitching again.
So we can put him on the 60, and that opens up a spot for Rio Ruiz.
The only issue with that is I think it affects his ability to start next season because he has to miss 60 days. So he's going to have to miss time next year. Now, I mean, does time missed during the offseason count as days missed? He's going to miss a certain number of days of the season.
Okay. Continue. I'll be looking that up to see if...
So Rio Ruiz just needs to be put on the 40-man. We've got to create room on the 40-man for him. It's going to happen by either releasing someone, trading someone. I think that's part of what the Jeff Francoeur trade was. In addition to giving him a reward, it was to create a 40-man spot. The next guy, Lucas Sims. Lucas Sims has been around the organization for a while. Fans are familiar with him. He was at one point the number one prospect in the organization. He's kind of slid down that list a little bit from a combination of injury, poor performance, but also we've just added a lot of new good prospects. He was a big fish in a small pond at one point. But I think Lucas Sims has a chance, an outside chance at being called up. He's not doing particularly well at AAA. He needs to be added to the 40-man roster as well. I believe he gets added to the 40-man here in the next couple of months because he's also subject to being drafted in the Rule 5 draft in December, and we'll have to protect him to prevent that. So does he get called up? I don't think so. And then that brings us to Ozzie Albies. And I think 3 weeks ago I was of the opinion Albies gets called up in September. Now I'm probably less than 50% that he gets called up. Not because he doesn't deserve it, because he's pretty much been destroying double-A ball. He struggled a little bit in triple-A, but he's been doing very well in double-A. But I think it's a procedural move why he doesn't get called up. It's an administrative thing.
Mm-hmm.
Ozzie Albies is not on the 40-man roster. The Rule 5 draft is coming up in December. For those that don't know, the Rule 5 draft allows teams to select players off the 40-man roster, out of the organizations of other teams who are not on the 40-man roster. It's done as a way to keep teams from stashing good players in the lower minors until they need them. So in order to protect a player has to have a certain amount of professional experience to be drafted. After a certain number of years, he has to be put on the 40-man roster or be subject to this Rule 5 draft. Ozzie Albies does not have enough time to require a 40-man protection, meaning he's not subject to being drafted in the Rule 5 draft in December. So we don't have to put him on the 40-man roster unless we want to call him up to the big leagues. But if we put him on the 40-man roster, that takes up a spot on the roster that can be used to protect one of our other players who may be drafted in that 40-man draft, like a Lucas Sims,
right,
or a Max Fried, or somebody like Rio Ruiz, for example. So I think the Braves may decide to not call up Albies, maybe promote him to AAA, but leave him off the 40-man roster just so that they can make sure they have enough spots on the roster to keep the players they want to keep, the Max Frieds and the Lucas Sims of the world. You were looking something up, and you have this look on your face now like you're confused.
I think that move would be legal.
Days versus game days?
No, it's,
put him on the 60 now and then.
Yeah, I think once the season's over, the deal is
reset.
I don't think it applies to next season.
If that's the case, then we can move Withrow, because we know Withrow's on the 15 day, although he's started a, GCL appearance.
Yeah.
So he may be coming back too. But we're going to have the point is we're going to have plenty of spots to create in order to call guys up. The ones that I see being called up have potential to be called up that are not on the roster right now are Albies and Ruiz. I think Ruiz gets called up. Dustin Peterson just having a tremendous year.
Leave it at that though.
Yeah,
this point
he's not going to, you know, maybe promote him to AAA and just give him some time there.
Yeah.
But there's no need for that. Other than that, I think most of the guys that are going to get called up in September are guys we've seen already for most of the year.
The guys we already talked about. Yeah. I agree. Anything else?
Go Braves.
Okay. Well, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or your podcasting application of choice. You can read us at outfieldflyrule.com. Also, it's worth a quick mention that with football season approaching, check out our sister site, optionread.com. Both Outfield Fly Rule and Option Read have Facebook groups that we encourage you to join and participate in discussion in. And follow us on Twitter and, you know, drop us a line and let us know how we're doing. And thanks for listening. And until next time, go Braves.
Have a good day.